Let's get on that aforementioned G&M Family Market phone line. And welcome back to the show, veteran sports writer, the official historian of the Boston Red Sox, our friend Gordon Eads. Hello there, Gordon.
I guess I am veteran. You know something, Rich? I'm just looking at some old files of the Chicago Tribune, which is where I started my journalism career. And it was 40 years ago this year that I wrote my first published story. How about that, man?
That's Bob. How is that possible? You started writing for the Tribune when you were eight?
Yeah, there you go. Touche, brother. I like it.
I say that because this past summer I celebrated my 42nd year in radio.
There you go. So our careers have been on parallel courses. You know, I like it.
Well, no, I mean, yours has been successful. Mine's, you know.
Hey, we both survived. That's the key thing. And
absolutely
going strong.
Well, so much going on with the Red Sox, and I want to talk about what's happening tomorrow. But a very cool thing that the team did this week. Can you talk a little bit about the gift of socks?
Yeah, gift of socks is you know, our social media people are pretty amazing. They came up with this concept. I think last year may have been the first year that we did it, and they invited people to, you know, to go on Twitter and ask for various things, and you know, put a gift of socks hashtag on there, and we fanned all over the city. I know there were a couple of folks who went to Logan Airport and handed out tickets to folks. I'm not sure if they were coming in from Fort Myers or on their way down to Fort Myers, but we gave them tickets to a ball game. I went with a number of our young players, Matt Barnes and Devin Marrero, Brian Johnson, Austin Maddox, and Brock Holt. We went to a great school in Roxbury and met with a bunch of second to fourth graders. The guys passed out backpacks and all, and the kids were just so pumped. And they did all, I mean, we had people show up at a construction site and hospitals and cop shops, and it's a cool thing. And I haven't heard the final report yet on just what we dispensed this week, but a lot of goodies in time for Christmas, which is pretty cool.
Now, I don't believe there'll be any investigation into collusion, but I did get a good chuckle when I saw that our friend Mike Lowe of the Portland Press Herald managed to score a couple of tickets.
Oh, is that so?
He did.
Should call for an investigation, man.
They were for his son, who had a birthday this week, so that worked out quite well. But
that
was nice. Great.
That's very cool.
Tomorrow, big day at Fenway Park. Tickets go on sale. It is Christmas at Fenway tomorrow.
It is, and it's a first chance that we give our fans the opportunity to buy single game tickets for April and May, and our Sox packs. The box office will be open here at Fenway at 10, and you can also go online at redsox.com or get on the horn and call 877-RED-SOX-9 to order your tickets. Rich, as you well know, we typically coincide schedule the Christmas at Fenway to coincide with the end of the winter meetings and presumably us having made an acquisition or two. But as you've been watching, and Dave Dombrowski was telling us the other day that in 30 years he doesn't recall an off-season that has unfolded as slowly as this one. You know, I think the unique circumstances of Ohtani coming onto the market, and trust me, we still wish we'd been given a chance to make our pitch to him. And then the Giancarlo Stanton trade talks kind of put everything else on the back burner. And it's worth noting that the agent representing both J.D. Martinez and Eric Hosmer, two players that we have great interest in, is Scott Boras. And we all know he has a history of waiting out clubs if that's what it takes to get a favorable deal. As I think you saw this week in Orlando, there wasn't a whole heck of a lot of activity, but that's got to break sooner or than later. I think we've seen some signs of that even today. You know, Carlos Santana signing with the Phillies. The Phillies then turned around and traded Galvis to the Padres, and I think between now and Christmas, you'll see more and more activity. Whether that means we'll get our man by then, in a lot of ways, you know, who's going to blink first, Scott or Dave? But I have great confidence. You look at Dave's track record. He's always been very aggressive in the off season in terms of addressing our needs. You know, getting a David Price, then Sale and Kimbrel and relievers like Thornburg and Carson Smith. He's usually been very aggressive, and I think we've gotten a little spoiled because in his first couple of years here, he was able to strike pretty early and get things done quickly. And this year, it's unfolding a little more slowly, but I think you're going to see us make some significant moves before pitchers and catchers report on Valentine's Day.
Now, I know some media outlets have reported that there's interest in both Hosmer and in J.D. Martinez. Now, you can tell us, Gordon. No one else is going to hear this.
Right. Between us, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I would say this, Rich, and I'm not speaking with a tremendous amount of inside knowledge here, but I would not rule it out. You know, our ownership, John Henry, Tom Werner, have indicated a willingness to go over the luxury tax threshold. There's no question that our lineup does need a bit of an injection of particularly of power. We were last in the American League in home runs last season. So while it would represent an enormous financial commitment to sign both guys, I don't think it's out of the question, but we'll have to see how that unfolds. I mean, if Boris doesn't move off his initial asking price of 7 years for Martinez, one, I don't know if we'd even go there, and two, that would certainly seem to rule out making two moves. But I'm as intrigued as you are, Rich, to see what we, you know, whether we're willing to make that leap. You have to remember, you know, it wasn't that long ago that Ben Cherington doubled up on big bats when he signed both Hanley and Pablo Sandoval, and that didn't work out all that well. So stay tuned.
Absolutely.
It's going to be fun.
We're talking with Gordon Eads here on Downtown. The Red Sox next class of the Hall of Fame was announced this week, and it's a terrific group and some great ties to that team that ended the drought back in 04.
Yeah, you know, we're really fired up about this year's class. You know, Derek Lowe, and I'll never forget, Rich, on the eve of the postseason in 04, sitting with Derek in the dugout, it was just the two of us, and he was bemoaning, you know, he thought he was in a bad place, that he'd fallen out of favor with Terry Francona, kind of expressed the feeling that he was the 11th man on an 11-man pitching staff. Well, we all know what happened. You know, Derek pitches the clinching game in the division series against the Angels, pitches and wins the clinching game 7 against the Yankees, in the ALCS, you know, to climax the greatest comeback in the history of professional sports, and then wins the deciding game in our four game sweep of the Cardinals in the World Series. So, you know, Derek's a guy, 20 game winner, also a 40 save guy, also threw a no hitter. We think he's more than deserving induction, and then the other two guys, Mike Lowell and Kevin Youkilis. It's funny, Rich, when you think of the impact that the acquisition of Mike Lowell had on Youkilis's career, sent him across the diamond from third to first base, and you not only accepted the move, he embraced the move and thrived at first base, set a record for consecutive errorless games at first base. Lowell, of course, winding up being the MVP of the 07 World Series. Uke having a great year, in seven as well. And I think fans are just going to love the fact that those three are going in together. And we have a guy from, we were just bragging about being around for a while, Rich.
Yeah, you and I both remember Buck Freeman, who was.
See, I was going to take us off the hook and say that Buck predates us. You know, Buck was the turn of the 20th century guy.
He was the J.D. Martinez of his time, a first baseman outfielder with power, 13 homers.
Jay, my brother, I like it. You know, that's a great call, and I'm going to be stealing that line.
You take it.
Yeah, so Buck Freeman goes in, and then a wonderful gentleman.
Al Green. Everybody loves Al Green.
Yeah, I don't know if you've had the chance to meet Al. Rich, I'm guessing certainly if you come in that press entrance, that press gate at Gate D, and Al's in that fan services booth right there, and he's worked for us for 44 years, and generations of fans have come to know Al, and the man just celebrated his 90th birthday this past summer, so we're thrilled he's going in as well.
That is fantastic. Hey, the other night we had our annual Red Sox Hot Stove Night. Former coach, that hurts a little, Brian Butterfield was up here with Joe Castiglione, Dave O'Brien, and Tim Neverett, and we were talking about things, and it sounds like Dave is going to be working. Next month, he'll be over at Foxwoods as part of the winter weekend, right?
Yeah, and you know, this will be our fourth winter weekend in Foxwoods, and for me, Rich, it affords a real opportunity for our fans to hear from everyone, you know, from the top down in this organization. You know, our owners, John Henry and Tom Werner, they speak at the town hall along with Sam Kennedy, our president, Dave Dombrowski, Alex Cora will be introduced. Most of our current roster will be in attendance. Plus, you have some of the legends from past seasons, like Jason Veritek and Pedro and Louis Tion. I saw, by the way, Rich, you know, I know how fond you are of Louis. I saw him this morning. He actually came into the offices, and I expressed my regrets that once again, you know, he got short shrift in the Hall of Fame voting. For the life of me, I don't understand it. I do not understand it. The man reinvented himself. I mean, he was one of the great power pitchers of the 60s for the Cleveland Indians, gets hurt, reinvents himself as the magician that we came to love as El Teonte in Fenway Park. I sent a lot of material to the committee in hopes that I could talk some sense into him, but failed clearly. Louis got very little support from the committee, but I'm expecting that he'll be there. As you mentioned, OB will be there, Tommy Caron. You know, your kids get a chance to hit in batting cages and run bases, and folks get a chance to pretend they're Remy's partner and do an inning in a simulated radio booth. Great panel discussions. It's really it's a 2-day immersion into baseball, and for me it's really like the kickoff of the season. Just a month, less than a month, really, before the guys will be reporting to spring training.
Gordon Eads with us here on Downtown. Now, I'm looking ahead to next year, and the organization does celebrations better than anybody, as we know. It was great this past year to recognize the 67 Red Sox, but now we're coming up on a significant 100th anniversary, the centennial of that 1918 team. So are they bringing back Bullet Joe Bush, Harry Hooper? Who's coming?
Well, you know, that for us, 1918 resonates for a couple of other reasons, too. It's the 100th anniversary of Ted Williams' birth.
That's right.
As well as the 100th anniversary of Bobby Doerr's birth. And we are right now in the midst of planning a special photo display that will debut at JetBlue Park. Last year, we had a special photo display honoring the 67 team by the great Globe photographer Frank O'Brien. this time with the assistance of the Ted Williams Hall of Fame Museum, we're planning to do some special things with both Bobby Doerr and Ted Williams. Beyond that, I'm not, you know, we kind of keep some of this stuff close to the vest, Rich, but I'm sure we're going to have some of appropriate acknowledgments of those gentlemen and the 18 team sometime during the course of the season. One thing that I, you know, it is another anniversary, but I suspect we'll let it pass unacknowledged, and that's 40 years after Bucky bleeping Dent, you know, so.
Yeah, I'm not going there. I'm not going there
not
at all.
Not going there, exactly.
You mentioned Bobby Doerr, and we were chatting the other night at our event with our friend Tim Samway, who had the chance to chauffeur Johnny Pesky and Bobby Doerr and Dominic DiMaggio several years ago to the Hall of Fame. And I had the pleasure of meeting Bobby many, many years ago. First of all, a fantastic player, well worthy of the Hall of Fame and having that number retired. But what a wonderful, kind gentleman he was as well.
Yeah, and you can't find anyone who played with or against Bobby Doerr to say an unkind word about him. You know, he was the guy who kind of, if anyone could tame the beast that was Ted Williams at times, you know, Bobby Doerr came very close to doing so. Ted was extremely close to Bobby Doerr. And when the club was on the road and Ted wanted to go for a walk and you know, work off some of that pent up energy and frustration or whatever, it was always Bobby Doerr that he sought out. And one of the great components of Bobby Doerr's saga, I think, is the enormous love and affection he displayed to his wife, who was stricken very early in her life by multiple sclerosis, and Bobby Doerr took wonderful care of her right up until the time of her death.
Absolutely. Hey, Gordon, it's always so much fun for us to talk with you. Thanks for making time for us this afternoon.
Hey, Rich, I hope you gave Butter a great send-off today. We're going to miss him. What a class act he is, and means so much, you know, to the state of Maine and up your way. And I only wish great things for him in Chicago, too.
We asked him if he could talk to Theo about sending Anthony Rizzo back, and he said, over my dead body.
Nice try, though, Rich. I give you credit for that.
It was worth a shot.
Hey, have a great Christmas, my friend.
Thank you, Gordon. You as well. We'll talk with you again soon. That's Gordon Eads, Red Sox historian here on Downtown.